coming here with your dirty bait, son?
Hi, Chaz.
Hello again, Pete.
You're listening to Brain Cigar
and Ambulance
podcast. This week sponsored by La Bali Poro
and Julian's Kitchen and Grill, Victoria, London.
Anyway, this week we do have a bit of confession to make, listeners.
We do.
A lot of you are still asking about shows 1 to 6. A lot of really cool things happened in them, but obviously we don't currently have access to them.
So we don't. Should
No. They've been wiped.
So what? What?
They were wiped.
What? Is this some kind of promotion?
No. It's not a huge problem. We've lost the first 6 podcasts. They're completely gone. So I don't know how that sounds like a promotion.
How do you mean? What do you mean lost them? Once they're in cyberspace, they're out there, surely.
Yeah, but there's a lot of you think about space. You think space and cyberspace. You know, there was actually a series a long time ago when I was a kid called Lost in Space, so things can get lost in space. Yeah, yeah. We thought it would be best to come clean with our listeners.
You might have thought. I mean, I didn't know about this at all. What the hell's happened, Pete?
There was some kind of server crash. It's not a huge deal. It's not just us, okay? So you don't need to come after me. Well, Jenny Lecote's History of Post-War Hungary has gone completely. The last 7 episodes of Patty Boulay and John Humphrey's Care Home sitcom. I mean, there's 406 of those, so that's no fucking big deal, you know.
But we got all ours backed up, surely.
I'm not backed up, you know. I remember them.
You could have mentioned this to me off air, mate.
Well, you were fucking. You went for a piss, okay? You know, we got here. You need to go in the toilet.
Right, great. Okay.
I think it's better if we just concentrate on salvaging the best. Let's be positive about this, okay? Just salvage the best stuff from the first half dozen Brain Cigar podcasts. You know, I mean, I was a kid. I used to have a tape recorder when I was 11, and I used to plug the little microphone in, and I used to hold it up to the radio, and so maybe people still do that.
That's kind of... It's a little bit fanciful, I think.
So if anyone out there has that interview with Richard Branson from Show 2, you remember the one? He got sick. Mm. He came in. He talked for a good 3 or 4 minutes, but the guy was not well. Bit of a bad way. Mm. And Jim phoned from the car and sent an intern in to carry on for the last 38 minutes of the interview.
As him. That was a bit odd. Okay.
All right, you can tone down the okay, you know, having a piss and I didn't know about
Okay, what else? We'll save this. Maybe that arms dealer roulette game from show 5. That had some sort of zeitgeist value, I suppose.
We probably need H from Steps Guide to Affordable Laptops. So let us know if you have any copies of those early Brain Cigars.
Yep, let us know.
That one with John Major when he started crying?
I don't think that went out, did it?
Blinding breakfasts.
What? Blinding breakfasts?
Those of you who've been tuning into Brain Cigar over this past month or so, you'll notice that we have another sponsor this time out.
Yep, we're delighted this edition to be right here at Julian's, brand new London restaurant here in Victoria. It says here, Julian's, the exciting new dining experience in the West End with a unique guarantee of satisfaction.
That's right.
The other voice you can hear is that of Julian Pennington, the owner and frankly the brains behind Julian's with its revolutionary take on eating out.
That's right.
Julian, welcome to Brain Cigar, or should I say, thank you for inviting us here to Julian's.
Thanks, Jess. Thanks, Pete. Yes, Julian's offers the diner a complete dining experience and post-meal security in a way that no other London eatery has ever done before.
Post-meal security is an interesting phrase there. Do you want to elaborate on that?
Yeah, of course. Like many a restaurant, we suffered a few, shall we say, teething problems in our earlier venture. JMP Kitchen.
JMP Kitchen, the place in Waterloo?
Yeah.
That was you?
Yeah.
Let the man explain. It's fine.
As was reported quite widely and not always accurately, we had a few hygiene concerns.
Well, more than a few, if I remember rightly.
Yeah, we had issues with some of the chicken dishes.
Issues? People were hospitalised, mate.
Yeah, if I may continue. We'd employed a chef who... left a shade to be desired. Some of the produce was inefficiently stored and prepared. It's a widespread problem in country.
I'm not sure it is a widespread problem.
But what we at Julian's propose to do is cover the customer against such eventualities.
How exactly?
Well, presumably by employing better staff. Give the guy a chance.
This is the JMP kitchen.
No, let me explain. Julian's guarantees that any customer who, shall we say, gets sick as a result of having eaten at our restaurant shall be entitled to a full refund or a replacement meal, provided that he or she can prove that our food was what caused the problem.
What? How do you propose to do that?
Well, by inviting our customers to return with either faecal or vomitory evidence of having dined here, plus a valid doctor's certificate.
What?
It's all right. Let him speak.
The fuck?
Right. It's
fine.
Our premises are fully equipped with a miniature laboratory in which expert analysts can determine how the producer of said sample might have become infected.
What?
And as assuming that all's legit, then the customer in question may claim a discount from his next meal purchase.
Jesus fucking Christ. Are you seriously suggesting that patrons show up here with a bucket of their own diarrhoea?
Oh, that'd be ridiculous. But we only require a small sample.
But
right? That's why we keep a ready supply of these cack packs for the diner to take away, of course.
Look at that. God, you've got to say, it's a pretty bloody original idea.
No, it's horrible. I'll give you it's original. It's fucking disgusting. I can't believe it. I mean, expert staff who can analyse the stools.
Or vomit.
Well, which I guess it's whichever they prefer to bring along.
Well, there's always a huge amount of choice in the matter, is it? Obviously.
In the matter, that's very good.
This is not very good. This is horrible. I mean, this place isn't that big. Where's your laboratory? In the cellar?
Ah, good heavens, no. No, that's for bulk storage and our enviable selection of wines. The laboratory's over there, attached to the kitchen.
Next to where the food is prepared. Are you serious? This is a restaurant. You can't be handling vomit and shit when there's food being prepared. What if people became seriously ill?
Well, they come back and claim a discount.
Blimey. It's foolproof.
It's insane. It's fucking ridiculous.
Who else in the capital is offering this kind of service? Not bloody Ramsay, that's for sure.
He's got a point here.
Well, of course Ramsay's not. I mean, why would Ramsay not? He's not mentally ill. I mean, how do you cover the cost of the lab assistants? I mean, I can't believe I'm even asking that.
Obviously, there is a customary £35 charge for lab time. Plus, if after the sample's been analysed, your ailment is shown to have occurred as a result of having eaten here at Julian's, then this is, of course, refunded.
And if it isn't?
Well, there's no refund. I mean, obviously, we can't just be leaving ourselves open to exploitation from any customer who might fall sick for any other reason.
I'm sorry. I know you gave us sponsorship money. I don't know how much you gave us, but this is absolutely ridiculous and probably against the law.
Well, it isn't.
Pete, leave it. Right.
How is it not?
No, look, Julian's paid 170 quid toward the studio time, and he topped up your Oyster card.
Yeah, and I bought Cokes earlier.
Sweet Jesus. I mean, wait a minute. We just ate here.
Yeah.
Julian Pennington, thank you.
Oh, you're welcome.
Those desserts look quite nice.
Those are desserts.
Waddington Bear.
What? Waddington Bear?
Okay, round about this time in proceedings, we hand over to our shared podcaster, John Church.
Throughout.
John Church, with excerpts from his autobiography, The Architecture of... Did we manage to find out whether this was ever published?
Christ knows.
The Architecture of Bacon. Look, we have to do this.
I do feel compelled to assert that matters haven't been the same at Morgan Brothers since Gregory took Wednesdays away from me. I always enjoyed the midweek slot, and am no longer confident where I might place myself now that the extinguishing of said day from my roster that leaves me with merely Friday mornings at the trouser bar. This has reached something close to crisis point with the introduction of the boy. I believe his name is Russell. Into the Morgan Brothers food chain. I find that I am unable to place myself into a state of calm when the boy is in my environs. And would almost go so far as to say that the register of his voice is enough to cause my skin to oversensitize. Of course, prior to the boy's appearance at Morgan Brothers, a sequence of other sporadic personnel may be noted. These included a physics student with a questionable taste in eye furniture, a gentleman from Belgium by the name of Frepp, who was occasioned to sally forth very suddenly after chancing to upend a three-day-old mug of Bournvita over Gregory's monthly findings, and also a very young, albeit nameless individual with a collapsible bicycle and a highly prominent jawbone that lasted from August to December 1987. Many months of conjecture have led me to believe that the aforementioned jawbone may have departed Morgan Brothers with a pocket full of liquid paper. But I don't care to speculate.
Past Masters, our occasional look at treasured family heirlooms. This week, I visited Jez to see something familiar on an unusual track.
Yes.
Yes, I've got it right.
Yeah. Okay, here she is.
Yes.
Okay, be incredibly careful with this, please, Pete. No, look, please just handle those pages.
Okay,
as careful as you can. And can you put your... Please, don't put your coffee so close to it. Move that over there. You've got to be
Okay, sorry. Yeah. Anyway, all right. Can you fill everyone in on what this is?
Yeah, briefly, my grandfather, Ernest, pretty amazing guy. He was a magician by profession.
Right.
This was kind of during World War II, just after World War II, I would say.
So how did your grandfather get this?
He used to collect antiquarian books from book fairs, you know, in church halls. But around about 1970, and by which time, you know, my grandfather would have been quite elderly, one of his contacts, he told him about this book that Reverend Audrey, yes, it is the same Reverend Audrey, obviously.
Thomas the Tank Engine.
James the Red Engine had put together. This was a side book, offshoot. Right. The Anatomy and Bodily Functions of Thomas the Tank Engine and Friends.
Bloody hell.
I know.
Yeah, I mean, it looks quite fragile.
Well, it is. You know, you're welcome to, you know, you can open it up. And
yeah.
Don't worry about that. Just be careful with the pages.
I'm looking at it now. I mean, I'm going to explain it for the listeners. The cover has an illustration of Thomas, you know, like as we know him, but with a cross section. So it's something kind of like a medical manual or anatomy book. You know, there's old, the human body.
Yeah.
And it's like it's pretty astonishing stuff, you know. There's a cross section cutting through Thomas's hide here, and underneath his locomotive body, you can see like a layer of I guess that's fat.
So like the hide is sort of the shell of the train, the chassis, I guess.
And then you've got like you see the muscles
there,
the veins, some kind of spine, brain stem running down
that
the middle.
That page, be careful. I think that's coming.
Okay.
It was in a damp attic for at least 3 decades.
Right. It's kind of troubling. You look at it here, and I'll open it up.
Yeah, no.
So I'll be very careful.
No, that's okay.
But it's just to think that this, you know, people think of Thomas as a cute, like, or a slightly bizarre train with a face. This is what was in Reverend Audrey's mind. I don't know.
Well, I think
Audrey wanted kids to believe in Thomas as a sentient being. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, how much sense that would make to like a four-year-old, I've no idea. But, you know, like a being, presumably one trapped in the body of a locomotive. Look, you can see here, he refers to it as a locoped, which is an expression I've never seen anywhere else. Oh, but
it's kind of disturbing. I mean, I've got to say, I was never really into Thomas as a kid.
No.
I found him a little bit upsetting. I don't know if you, I could never quite pin down why. And now, I think he's hit it. He's, you know, because you're wondering deep down how the fuck that face, that kind of grey face on the front of the thing, how it functions. Yeah,
can pull expressions, that kind of thing. Yeah. Okay. This book kind of answers it.
So what are we looking at here? So this is his full body?
Yeah, there we are. And then on this page, the same thing,
right,
but without skin. So you can see here where are located vital organs. Fat there, brain,
Thomas had ears, eyes. Fat.
Digestive organs there, lungs.
Oh God, what does he have? Does he breathe? Does he have gills? I mean, I don't know. Like,
well, I'm assuming these are lungs, unless that's something he's just eaten.
Yeah.
Excretory system. See? So, you know, nothing's been left to chance. Look, colon, rectum, and there's his anus, just there. Thomas's anus.
It's just extraordinary. It's like, it's you know.
Okay, keep going. Yeah.
Okay, so what have we got now?
Over here.
His head.
Yeah. Okay, so this is the head specifically.
Yeah.
Look,
here's how the face works. Look.
There you go. There you go. So all your questions, well, not all of them, but that question answered. So.
I mean, there's a whole lot of other questions.
There are many other questions. What was happening in Tom? Yeah, but
Reverend Audrey's
I think
head.
Where we came in, though, was with the old facial muscles. Yeah. And I mean, this kind of pretty much tells you all you need to know.
The human face has 21 muscles. The locoped has 7. Happy, angry, sad, jealous, stroke, envious.
Yeah.
Hopeful, determined, and fast.
It's interesting that he's referring
fast
to those.
Not an emotion.
No, well, I was thinking, I'm not sure that, you know, he's referring to these as expressions. I mean, well, I suppose they sort of are.
Well, yeah, I mean, they are just fast. I mean, but,
Well, he's a train, isn't he? So.
Right, so what's the face made of? Is it metal?
No, it's more like elephant hide. It's like thick skin.
So the brain's got the brain. The brain runs through the middle of the locomotive.
Yep.
The locoped has a mental age of 14. God.
A specific age. Okay, so that's interesting. I wonder if he means like sort of young sexual maturity or whatever. I'm not sure I really want an answer to that, to be honest. But
God, that's ears.
So
he's got the optical organs there.
Yeah.
Breathing organs. Oh, look, he does. He has gills. Thomas has gills.
Oh, okay.
What's this? So what's this here?
Next page, digestive system is quite good, quite interesting.
Right. How does it eat?
Well, it's drawn in the books as coal, because obviously
the driver shovels the coal into the fire.
Yeah, so that's feeding, you know, the shovel as kind of a kind of crude spoon as such. Obviously, steam engines were run on coal or with coal.
Well, steam engines weren't alive.
No. Well, I think this is the whole point. I mean, it's drawn as coal in the books.
It doesn't have anuses.
It's drawn that way in the books because they obviously don't want it to be too horrific for the kids. But what it actually is, it's they're like rusks.
Right.
They're made from compressed meat. It says here rye, crushed brain and offal. I'm assuming from cattle, probably. Yeah.
Or other, I mean, is it other vehicles?
Other
vehicles,
like, I don't know.
God, they're not cannon. I'm still reeling from the fact that he has a rectum and an anus. I don't want to find out.
Yeah, well, I kind of think, you know.
That out of his anus comes
I think
fecal matter made from other trains. That's not.
I don't think he was a cannibal. I wouldn't maybe dwell on that too long if I were you. So anyway, there you go. Look, there's the driver.
Right.
Shoveling it in. If you look at this drawing here.
Yeah.
I think this is one of the ones that upset me the most. But anyway, look, it's actually a hideous wet maw. Really basic teeth.
All right, okay. Turn over. Whoa. Oh, my God. Reproductive organ. So, what we're looking at now, it looks like a whole section on how the sex organs work.
Yeah.
How sex occurs.
Yeah.
Oh, I see he has both male and female organs.
There's an actual sex act described between the two locomotives.
Oh, God.
I know, it's horrific.
Oh, my God. I'm looking at a penis and or uterus.
That's the uterus cross-section of.
Testes.
There are the testes, the sperm. Across the page is a fertilised egg growing into a zygote. than a fetus in the womb. Here it is at 1 week, 1 month, and you can see the eyes forming, the curled up locomotive shape there. And at 2 months, you can see the curled wheels and the steam pipe, like a prawn with wheels, you know, but on a little tiny little furnace.
That's something I'm going to struggle with when I go to bed tonight.
Mm-hmm.
Local pets have large litters, as many as 12. The baby tank engines, only 4 inches long, are born blind, helpless and pink. The outer metal is soft, more like plastic than iron, and the wheels are little more than round spoked buds. Survivors of species, the mare, that's what he calls the female, mm-hmm. often has to take drastic, unpleasant action that for us may fly in the face of their good-natured demeanour. If she senses a runt in the litter, an unformed blast pipe, deformed coupling or a sense of the infant won't be able to get up to full speed on the train tracks, the mother will often kill the baby by running it over or shunting it into the buffers.
Yeah, we can see why they didn't want to publish.
Fucking hell.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Then she will eat the baby.
Okay, so there was cannibalism then. All right.
This may seem horrific and cruel, but nature often is. This said, locopeds are affectionate, deeply empathetic creatures. Having digested his offspring,
yeah, I know.
The mother will retreat into her siding and cry for 3 or 4 days. They've even been known to mourn. They've been known to mourn the fecal matter resulting from the cannibalised baby train. Jesus fucking Christ!
Well, I mean, I think as we speculated, as far as the publishers were concerned, this is probably where the Reverend Audrey crossed the line for what was considered a book for young children.
Struggling with this, I got to be honest.
I know, it gets grimmer as we go, I'm afraid.
Oh, good, good to know that.
Yeah, there you go.
Oh, shit, sorry.
Have you got some tissue? You just put something over the end of that. Oh, God, look, you've even made it stain. That's horrible.
Mm. What are those other stains?
I don't know.
Do you want to tell me more about your grandfather?
Top monkey.
What? Top monkey?
Okay, a couple of gigs and whatnot to run through. Lovers of loud, if rather aimless, stoner metal might enjoy Amethyst Slugcatcher at the Yorkshire Grey. In Clerkenwell. They're supported by Haircuts in a Hospice, an indie calypso duo. That's on Saturday week.
I might give that a go. Okay, Liver Risk are on at the King's Head in Carshalton Beaches. Not sure whether that's a band, a comedy troupe, or just a health warning.
Lovers of West Country grime might enjoy MC Badly Positioned Postage Stamp at the Holy Fire in Morden on Sunday.
Finally, Graham Deeger is back by popular demand at the Stockwell Square House with Late Again, his fascinating and informative slideshow outlining all the times over his life he's arrived too late for a play or musical and had to wait until the interval to be admitted. There will be some strobe effects and 3 human deaths in the second half, so bring a raincoat. Over and out.
Roger that.
Daddy, I hope that
Hand him.